From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm producer Megan Mack. Our connection this hour began in 1812, when the early settlement of Frankfort was established on the west high bank of the Genesee River. It didn't take Frankfort's residents long to realize the power of High Falls and the Genesee. The water generated enough hydropower to support Frankfort's mills and factory over the next 100 years. In 1817, Frankfort was incorporated into the village of Rochesterville. At the turn of the century, the rise of steam engines and the advent of electricity enabled companies to move away from the High Falls area. Since then, we've seen the area change. There have been attempts to bring it back to its former glory, but nothing has seemed to stick. In 2011, Greentopia was born and set its sights on the potential of High Falls. And in early January of 2016, it will unveil its very first project, what they're calling the Flower Garden, that's F-L-O-U-R, at Brown's Race. It's one of many, many projects in the works, and we'll spend the hour exploring those with our guests. The founders of Greentopia are in studio with us today. Louis Stess is the president and CEO, and Michael Phillipson is the CCO. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Megan.
So let's dial it back a little bit. Greentopia was founded in 2011. You've known each other for a very long time. Tell us the story of how Greentopia began.
Seems like years ago, but really it was only a few short years ago. I returned to Rochester. Louis had actually moved here a year before me. We visited High Falls and were pretty much astounded that nothing really seemed to be going on there, although it looked like a lot of work had been done. This was back in 2008 or so, 2007.
About that.
And, you know, we had a design firm. We were doing work here, and we just thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if something could happen here at High Falls? You know, we'd heard about other projects in Massachusetts and around the world. These waterfront sort of riverway projects were beginning to take hold. And we wondered if the same thing could happen here. So we basically put together a little show. We took it on the road and found out that there really was interest and had been for quite some time on and off to do something at High Falls. It was just, how do you do that? And, you know, how do you make it more sustainable than attempts that had happened in the past?
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to add that we turned to each other the day that we saw the falls, and we both looked at each other and we said, almost simultaneously, where is everybody? You know, any other place, mostly any other place in any other city around the world would have a long time ago have done something with a spectacular place like this.
Mm-hmm. So over the last few years, Greentopia has had a very strong voice in the community regarding sustainability and green development initiatives. So from the film festival to the Future Summit to the Garden Aerial Project, you've been generating a lot of ideas. But let's go back to the basics. You probably get this question a lot. What exactly is Greentopia?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, we've done a strategic plan. It took us a year to do that. We're about ready to release that, you know, to the public. But it was a very long process of figuring out exactly who we are. You know, we've only been around 4 years. A lot of ideas were generated. We're nothing short of ideas, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it took a while to sort of find our footing and figure out what we might be able to do, what was feasible to do, what was really not feasible to do. So really, Greentopia, if you look at it, is if you think of a three-legged stool, Greentopia is really the stool. It has three legs. One of those is the Garden Aerial Project, which is the capital project at High Falls to create the amenities and sort of tourist attraction and a real placemaking project. That's our capital project. Green Visions is our community project of how do we get the community involved? How do we be good neighbors to our neighbors to the direct west? How could we actually create a future workforce to work in the Garden Aerial and to maintain it and operate it? And then the policy part of the stool, the policy leg, is the eco-district. Mm-hmm. How do we then bring all these things together under a understandable sort of umbrella? And that really turned out to be the eco-district and the wonderful efforts that are about to begin on that effort this coming year.
Mm-hmm. I want to tackle each of those individually. I think many members of our community may not know what some of them are. We had you on the show in October to talk about some of them, but things have changed over the last couple months. But I think the goals have remained the same. If you were to characterize the overall goals that you hope to accomplish, what are Greentopia's visions for Rochester?
Do you want me to get that?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
You're so polite.
I try to be on occasion. Really, we got to go back to the mission. The mission of the organization, which has been revised as a result of the strategic plan, is that through extraordinary ecological design, stewardship, community advocacy, that we are going to work towards community sustainability and creating public realms, green public realms.
Mm-hmm. And the vision of our organization has also changed somewhat in that we will use the Genesee River as the mechanism to sort of do that and to connect us to each other and really to create a more vibrant Rochester.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why so many people are excited about the Garden Aerial Project, because I think it's defined as a connective hub to other parts of the city. We'll talk more about that in a second. But first, I want to listen to a cut of Senator Joe Robach talking about Greentopia. This is from 2011, the first year of the Greentopia Festival. So let's take a listen to that.
Every one of the last three governors has talked about making a center in New York for green technology, green everything. And I think Rochester can be it in conjunction with RIT. The Greentopia Festival will not only stand alone as a great example and encouraging utilizing everything green and environmentally sound, but I think will be a great 1-2 punch and continue to enhance our community and our reputation in the state and country on green initiatives. I'm very, very excited.
So that was from 2011.
Interesting.
We're now at the end of 2015. Interesting. Yeah. Why are you saying interesting?
Because we've come a long way, and we've certainly come down that path. And there's been comments that we're sort of unfocused sometimes, but the reality is we're not unfocused at all. We're creative, and creativity sometimes breeds more creative stuff, and that's sometimes not looked upon, perhaps, in the same way that we would look at it. But we have come along the way that Joe said in 2011. We are no means, nor do we pretend to be experts in the green world. We're learning as we go, but we're dedicated to this. We're focused and dedicated.
I think Greentopia Festival itself, and even many of the initiatives still that continue to this day, are really a way to convene green thinking. Mm-hmm. We're big conveners. We're big collaborators. We like to get people together to talk about how we can move toward a more sustainable, resilient future. And I think that's what Joe was alluding to there by, you know, how can we convene some of these interests, groups, industries together? And Greentopia has actually served as a great platform for that convening. We don't have to be the experts in that. There are other people doing incredible work in this area. Mm-hmm. And the way that we can convene them through Future Summit, through our contacts at both MCC, RIT, U of R, that's the way we think to get this area moving forward and just bringing the lens and focus attention on how great it can actually be for Rochester.
Megan, I'm not sure if you're aware of what was then Senator Clinton, who came up here and worked with the Greater Rochester Enterprise to create something called the Green Print.
Yes.
As a report that was created on what could this area do to be more green and start positioning itself as a green hub. And if you look at that, and if you look at some of the work we're doing, in some ways, unknowingly, we have started to implement a lot of those ideas. And that's exciting for us because it was, at the time, and is, unintentional.
Mm-hmm. What specifically do you think has been implemented that falls within that realm?
Well, I think, interestingly enough, the city has garnered some funding and so forth to create its first climate action plan. For instance,
correct.
That did not exist when we came on the scene. That is a great step forward in moving the city and the region, I think, toward a more green and resilient stance. So that's, I think, one really good example of, you know, some of the things that have happened. We in our goings and comings are involved with several groups, Rochester Sustainability Coalition, Green Drinks. There's a lot of people really buzzing and moving and talking in this direction. Rock Spot, the solar energy initiatives, you know, Reconnect Rochester. There's a lot of great things happening around alternative transportation. And so I think that, you know, if nothing else, we've acted as a little bit of a catalyst towards some of that. And I think that's great. And I think that others taking on their ideas and their interests is really also a great thing.
So when you talk about community partners, MCC is a big one.
Yes.
The Genesee Brewery is a big one.
Yes.
For listeners who may not know exactly how you're working together, can you explain some of those projects?
Sure. With regard to MCC, we've had a really good relationship with them pretty much since the beginning. Dr. Kress is on our advisory council, so that was a good entree into the college. They help us with facilities. They were a partner with the recent Future Summit and a real collaborative partner, not a sponsor. I truly mean a partner. We work together on what is it going to look like in High Falls? How are we going to green it together? One of their staff members, who is the director of planning, was also a member of our team that went to Portland to be part of the incubator, the Eco District incubator. So we're involved in many levels. The brewery, coincidentally, is now announced a green campus, environmentally friendly. They're across the road from us, and we're talking quite a lot about the partnership, what's going to look like, how can we help each other. And one of their, actually the general manager, the person that runs the brewery here, is on our board of directors.
Oh, fantastic.
Also, we have Joel Frater, the new executive dean of the downtown campus,
correct,
also on our board of directors. So having those partners has really been a key for us. You know, as a small nonprofit, it's hard sometimes to get the attention and to move forward with a limited capacity. But through those two partners especially, it looks like we're on a good future road,
yep,
together.
Mm-hmm. So with the Genesee Brewery, they were mentioned in the URI proposal, the Upstate Revitalization,
right,
Initiative, and that was linked to Greentopia in an indirect way.
Correct.
The plan is to expand the brew house to be a brewery incubator, a beer education center, and a museum, which will in turn draw tourists, which feeds into what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge victory for you, I
yes,
think.
Yes, it is.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, also the fact that they're going to do an eco brewery right in the middle of our eco district is really also just fortuitous and wonderfully aligns with their wishes as well.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that, sure, they're going to be drawing tourists, but so are we. And there's a certain audience for brewing or beers or things like that, and that's not everyone. And the Garden Aerial Project will bring other people to this vicinity, and they might then say, oh, look, there's a brewery. Maybe we should go on the tour. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be symbiotic.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm starting to see the phones line up. We will get to your calls in just a minute. If you're just joining us, we are speaking with the founders of Greentopia, Louis Stess and Michael Phillipson. They are about to unveil their new flower garden in Brown's Race, and we'll hear more about that in just a few minutes. But first, let's get to the phones. First up is John in Scottsville. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you all?
We're doing well.
I'm wondering if you all are familiar with Sherburne Falls and the Bridge of Flowers in western Massachusetts, and whether or not that's had an influence at all on some of your ideas.
John, this is Louis, and Michael and I just have this big grin on our face because, in fact, that is the inspiration for this project. I lived in Massachusetts. I was the head of United Way there, and it was, you know, it was sort of just a place to go to enjoy both the environment and all the little shops that sort of came about as a result of this beautiful little bridge. So we actually, the very first project, which is that was part of Garden Aerial, which was part of our original thinking, was called the Bridge of Flowers. That was the Pontarenne Bridge is, in fact, what we're calling, at least internally, our Bridge of Flowers. So it had a huge impact.
Right, and for those online that are listening that may not be so familiar with it, Sherburne Falls has an old trolley bridge. It was converted in the 1920s into this beautiful Bridge of Flowers. It was a textile mill town. When those all left, the Bridge of Flowers was really the economic engine that made that town really come alive, and
mm-hmm.
it's now just a wonderful tourist attraction in the middle of Massachusetts.
In the middle of nowhere.
Thank you,
great,
John, for the question.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
So speaking of the Pontarenne, where do things stand with that project?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, with the announcement of the brewery, with the, you know, impending coming of 3,000 students, I think it is, to MCC, right to our neighborhood, with the improvements going to be happening at Frontier Field, this east-west connection has suddenly become very important to a lot of people in this sort of alliance of, you know, gorge alliance, if you will. And that east-west connection is important to us as well. So the Pontarenne, the recreation or the creation or the, whatever we're going to do with that, with the community's input, of course, is something that has come now, is one of the projects that sort of jumped to the front of the line a little bit. I mean, you know, the Garden Aerial actually is a series of projects and amenities, and really what order they come in really depends on, you know, where the drive is, where the money can be found, and where the cooperation and the leveraging of money also mm-hmm. can be found. So the Pont de Rennes Bridge is very much in our in the sights for something sooner than later, let's just say.
Okay. You mentioned community feedback. Is there a place where members of the community can submit ideas? Are you accepting ideas from?
Surely they can do that a number of ways. They can certainly write us. They can call us. They can go on the website. So there's a variety of places. We have some open things that the public is certainly welcome to attend. So there's a variety of ways that we do this.
Yeah, and we'll also do, when we get closer to that time, we'll start opening up, you know, for public comment, public ideas about what might happen with that bridge.
Mm-hmm. Great. If you have questions or comments about Greentopia, you can call the program. The number is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, you can call 263-9994. You can also follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is mmacmedia, and Greentopia is also on Twitter. You can follow them at Greentopia Fest. They're also on Facebook. So speaking of people attending Greentopia events, last year, 23,000 people attended the Greentopia Festival. The festival was canceled this year, and I think a lot of people are wondering why. Can you shed some light on what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the idea of Greentopia Fest was really to showcase the green world, bring people to High Falls, get them interested in coming back or maybe even seeing it for the very first time, to really understand the breadth and the scope of the Garden Aerial projects. That festival was free and open to the public. Of course, it took a lot of energy, money, and effort on a very small staff to put on that festival year after year. What we realized is that even though people were coming, we were sort of missing getting messaging out to them all through the year. So we decided that it might be best for the festival at this moment to sort of take a hiatus and to spread out parts of that festival. For instance, we put our film festival in the spring. We put our Future Summit every 2 years. The Greentopia vendors actually went online on a great new website called greentopiany.org, where you can find out about all kinds of green services and products that we have built, hoping to expand that later to New York State. But the idea that Greentopia could be around year-round was really more interesting to us than just having a very short period of time when we would be in the public eye.
Yeah, and what I like to add to that is we're only four people in the office, you know, and we have big projects, and we want to make sure they're done successfully. And so we also have to prioritize. And at a time when we started Greentopia, it was a way of getting the message out about green, but also about the project. And it served that purpose. We very much copied, and copy is probably a good word, what they did with the High Line. The High Line in New York City, they started bringing attention to the vision by hosting a festival at the bottom of the rail spur. We've basically done the same thing. Like them, we can't do it all. But I'd like to think that it's only on a hiatus and that we will bring it back. But we were also moving away from what our real project was, what our real focus was, which was the Garden Aerial.
Mm-hmm. So phase one of the Garden Aerial, part of phase one, is the Flower Garden,
yep,
which is nearly complete. I know it's being pushed back slightly. The weather today certainly didn't help, but you've had some good luck over the past couple months.
We could not have asked for better weather.
So tell us a little bit about the Flower Garden. Mm-hmm. What can people expect?
Well, the Flower Garden is going to be an incredible new amenity for High Falls. As we went through the construction of it, we realized more and more how great this is really going to be for not only High Falls, but for Rochester as a whole. It will really create a new attraction and so forth for High Falls, night interest. There are seven fountains in the project. So it's not just the garden. It's really the garden plus this incredible waterworks that's an interpretation of the gorge and the millstones that are in it as a nod to the history of Brown's race as well in the history of Rochester, really. The fountains will be lit up at night. We can control the fountains from our laptops inside the office, so we may actually be able to eventually do sort of music and light shows from time to time, but it will really give a great new gathering spot, we think, also for the MCC students, for people coming and going from the brewery. So it really does create a wonderful spot. Lewis can maybe talk to why we did that project first, if you want to.
Well, it actually happened 3 years ago.
Yeah.
2013, the mayor then, Mayor Richards, was at our office. And as we often do, we're really persistent. And we push things sometimes because, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And at that time, he said, look, I love what you're doing. I think it's great. I think this is something Rochester needs. But I need to see a window. I need to see you start something and complete something because your vision is grand. But everyone thinks, oh, yeah, right. So can you do something to sort of alleviate that doubt that shows beginning, middle, and end? And then I think you're going to find that you'll have much more of the government institution, the academic institution, the public at large really behind us because they'll be able to see it. And we took that as a great challenge. And we're really happy because now it's almost done. I mean, we're talking days. Right. And so I think Mayor Richards would be happy. I think the current administration is happy, and I know we're happy.
Yes.
Is this your first official brick-and-mortar accomplishment as Greentopia?
Yes.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And so what are the next few windows, I guess, can we say?
That's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I talked before about this East-West connection, and it looks like we're starting to set our sights on basically sort of continuing the flower garden around the bend. One of those things is Granite Mills Square, which is a great little park, but it's been sort of neglected over time, and it's starting to show its signs of age and wear. And I know that WXXI and Hochstein put on a great music series there in the summer, but it'd be great if people could sit in a better configuration and all that. So, you know, as we look at the success of Flower Garden, it's like, okay, well, maybe we should just move on to Granite Mills next. And that would mean also the plaza in front of Pont de Ren Bridge. So obviously the planning for Pont de Ren comes swiftly after that, you know, in the next several years here. I think that's where our focus has really primarily shifted. And I think that it makes sense in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, we have to be nimble and we have to be adaptable to conditions as they come up. So while we had other visions sort of in line first, I think that now this looks like the most appropriate one.
And I like to say that, you know, MCC 2 years ago was not going to relocate where it is. 2 years ago, the brewery was owned by another company. Things have changed. Needs have changed, and we see the ability to help meet some of those needs and meet their needs and meet some of our own needs in establishing this next piece of the garden area.
When you were on the program in October, Michael, we talked about how this is the first time in a long time that the city is ready for something like this. The timing was just right.
Yes.
Is that still true moving forward? Do you see the next few years as a platform for continuing these changes?
Yes. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things going on downtown now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's also different than when we started 4 years ago. A lot more activity, you know, at Midtown, a lot more activity in the downtown core, a lot more, you know, the inner loop will be filled. These things are all, I think, but I think you have to do several things at once, you know, to be fluid and flexible and really meet the needs in a sort of holistic way. I think you have to be able to look at more than one thing at once. And so I think that High Falls with the brewery and MCC, and that's really another focus of attention that will just connect to all these other things and will actually create great synergy between these other improvements. So that's how we sort of see our efforts. You know, we'll continue along and hopefully begin to be able to connect with those things, much as the Eco District will connect with the Innovation Zone and so forth. So we see that connection through the Genesee River and through the proximity of these projects is also hugely important.
Mm-hmm. If you look at some of the expected outcomes of the Garden Aerial Project, I drew these numbers from your website. You're saying it will attract more than 200,000 visitors, mm-hmm. bring in more than $12 million into the local economy. approximately $1 million in new tax revenues to the county and the state and create more than 40 full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. What's the timeline? When are we going to see all these things happen? Because I think our city really needs something like this.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in a sort of gross 30,000 foot view timeline, I think we're looking at 10 to 12 years possibly.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, as these projects come online, they're going to need maintenance and operations, and Green Visions is a good example of where we're going to get those folks to really do that kind of work. Local folks for local work, local money, staying locally. It's a great combination. And I think that, you know, these numbers are not, you know, these are actually very conservative numbers. The brewery just came out with an estimate of 250,000 or something per year visitation just to the brewery. So we use numbers that are sort of extrapolated from the New York Park system. Our grant writer, Moran, actually put those together for us. And, you know, we were very careful to try to figure out exactly what, you know, it would be on a sort of conservative basis. So,
but what we also have done is we look at other projects similar to the Garden Ariel, which are happening all over the country. And the return on investment has the average, I think, is 1 to 20 or 20 to 1.
21. Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. You don't see that kind of return on investment. Mm-hmm. And it shows you what something like the Garden Ariel project, like the recapturing of our waterfronts, can really do to have a huge impact on a city. And, you know, when we talk about job creation, we're not necessarily just talking about the Garden Ariel, but the ripple effect. How many more businesses are going to grow as a result, grow alongside the Garden Ariel as a result of the project? And there will. How many new housing units will be created? How many more students might actually attend MCC downtown as opposed to in Brighton? I mean, there's, and we have to take those things into consideration, and they're good indicators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people have questions about programming and amenities. So I'll just go right out and ask, are you still exploring the zip line idea?
Yes, we're still exploring the zip line idea. You know, we proffered that idea as an idea, as a way to see if it were possible to bring more people and more attention to High Falls. The county at the time actually helped underwrite a little study to see where it would be and what it would consist of and all that. And it is possible to do that. And again, as interest in on the east side grows in the park area that Joe Robach actually gave money to, and that's going to start up in another year or so, as interest in the brewery, as interest in the bridge comes up, we are still looking at the possibility of doing that zip line. We think that it would be a great thing for Rochester and for people visiting, and again, a way to tie in a visit to Frontier Field with a zip down the falls or a visit to the brewery. We like to say you should zip before you sip, right? I think that's it. Or for some people, it actually might be the other way around.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Say, I don't know.
You know, I think that one point Michael is missing is, or another reason we're doing is, this organization, like any nonprofit, needs to have earned income ventures. And we saw this as a way to generate income into the nonprofit to maintain the gardens. You know, it's not just going to come from the philanthropic community. We have to have ways of generating that, and this was one of the ways that we came up with.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk more about funding in a moment, but let's take a short break, and we will be right back with more on Greentopia.
I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, one of our favorite annual traditions is back. It's Rochester and the Finger Lakes region's favorite books of 2015. People from the medical, art, political, science communities coming in to tell us what their favorite book was from 2015. Some ideas for reading for us and some insight into how their minds work. All of that Wednesday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Selena's Mexican Restaurant, serving Mexican fare to Rochester since 1998, offering on- and off-site catering and gift certificates in the Village Gate Square and online at selenas.com.
Welcome back. I'm producer Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about Greentopia this hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, you can call 263-9994. You can also find us on Twitter at MMACMedia. And Greentopia is at Greentopia Fest. So during the break, we were talking about the old laser show that used to be at High Falls. And I understand that will not be coming back, but there are some new ideas that are being explored that sound pretty exciting. Can you tell us about those?
We actually tested at the last Greentopia, we tested a projection option from the old Laser Lighthouse house. And we were successful in projecting images and video on the walls of the gorge with just one projector. We've been told that it would actually take sort of three or four projectors in line to actually get across the entire wall. We did borrow that projector from Stone Mountain in Georgia, actually, to do that test. But what it proved is that it can be done and that we could have projections at High Falls instead of laser light shows, which would be far easier to change out and so forth. The lasers were great, but the technology really required massive amounts of money and time to change out those shows. Mm-hmm. And the laser equipment was actually sold a few years ago. But the house is still there, and we think there's a good way to use that, I think, in the future.
What about tours of the gorge? Is that something you're considering?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we are just put on our website, Tours of the Garden Ariel. We're starting to offer 30-minute guided tours of the Garden Ariel project, the flower garden, which people can actually visit. And then a sort of, you know, this is what we're thinking about for the future tour of the sort of rim of the gorge there. You can sign up as a group or as an individual. I think they're the second and can't remember which Thursday they are, at noon hour, for so people can come down for lunch. But you can see it on our website. It's greentopia.org/tours, and we'll be starting tours of the area soon. We're also developing a mobile tour for the High Falls Business Association, which will be tied in with a garden aerial project that will actually be available on your smartphone with all kinds of great augmented reality and all kinds of wonderful interaction with the sites there.
That's great. I'm going to turn to the phones now. We have a question from Mark in Fairport. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, hi, guys. It's Mark in Fairport, and I've been listening to the show. I think it's a great great thing you're doing for the city.
Thank you.
The city definitely needs some help. But my only concern, question is, with the zip line, I'm not sure if I understand it completely. Will you be on the zip line? Will you be exposed to the elements?
Will you be exposed? Yes.
Yes.
You yes, will. You will.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, then, I'm born and raised in Rochester, but I've been in, born and raised in Buffalo, but I've been in Rochester since 95. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I just took the family up to Niagara Falls, and we went on the enclosed Ferris wheel. And we also went to Disney World and went on the monorail. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about maybe having possibly an enclosed gondola system with maybe a monitors inside that can educate the riders to all that Rochester and the surrounding counties have to offer, as well as what you guys are doing?
The answer would be yes.
If not, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, you're thinking like we are. You've hit it on the nail on the head. We think one of the things, again, that people find interesting about us is that we have a lot of ideas and a lot of creativity. And you have to. Honestly, you have to. Think big and see where you're going, as opposed to think small and, you know, be mediocre. Yes, we've talked about a gondola actually up the falls. I'm sorry, up to the lake. Can you take an enclosed gondola and actually travel the length of the gorge, which I guess is 7 miles? It's quite long.
Well, even not the gondola, maybe a reduced monorail.
Something, right.
Size system, you know, elevated. Absolutely. That would be so cool.
It would be cool. You're right. And it is in our, it's in our plan way, way, way.
And heated.
And heated, yes.
Yes, in Rochester. Yes, please absolutely. Let it be heated.
Yeah, and I'd like to say it's not only us that have talked about that. Several people have talked about a gondola or some kind
of... I thought it was my only idea.
No, but it's a good one. You want to help?
Very good idea. But a lot of people, we've seen a lot of sketches and drawings and things from people that we've talked to, and I think it is a great idea to... How do you open up that gorge for better interaction with it? It's tough because
the Genesee River, the Erie Canal. Absolutely. My God, those are just diamonds. Waiting for us to tap into.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Let's
You're welcome. Yeah, keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turning now to Norman in Rochester. Are you there, Norman?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. What's your question or comment about Greentopia today?
Sure. Yeah, I see these Green Visions kids all over the city, and I just I don't really. What's the connection there? What are they? What's Greentopia and Green Visions? The connection? I don't know.
Well, first, I'd love to. I thank you for seeing them. That means we're doing something right. And Michael and I can talk about this. This is sort of it's our community program. It's Greentopia's community program, our outreach to our neighbor next door. And it's really about, it's a workforce development program working in the Josana neighborhood. Each year, and this will be our fourth year, we take 15 at-risk youth that are from that neighborhood, that are out of school and unemployed, ages 18 to 21, so it's a really hard age, and we teach them about horticulture. And we grow flowers, and we do it on vacant lots that the city owns because you can't grow anything on a city-owned property as it relates to food. The results have been incredible. They've been more than we could have dreamt of.
Yeah, I mean, this program really has been an eye-opener. It's a 22-week-long program run by our program director, Morgan Berry. He's done a great job over these past several years getting that program up and running and off and really taking off. It's a way to change lives for these 15 kids, 15 young adults every year. Eventually, this will become the future workforce again for the Garden Ariel. How could we do that? So we're piloting a lot of that now. The flowers will be for sale again, I think, at Wegmans and Hart's this year.
Oh, they were this past year.
On a subscription service. So it's really a wonderful program, and it really brings happiness and great feeling to a sort of blighted area of the city. I mean, there are a lot of vacant lots, a lot of challenges in those neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Norman, for the question. I have a question about profits from those flowers. Where does the money go? Does it stay in the neighborhood? The sales of the flowers?
It actually goes back into supporting the program.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
this
is a program that started with a grant, as many programs do. We actually started with the city. The city's Environmental Services Department gave us money to do a phytoremediation pilot. It proved to be a successful first go-around. It was 8 young women at the time. We then got money from the Farish Foundation, their largest award for that year and the year after. And we've gotten a lot of other foundation awards. But this project cannot stand and live on beyond that. So the business plan that we are developing is actually to grow or become a wholesale flower business that will sell to hopefully places like Wegmans, and then that money will go back into the program to make it self-sustainable.
And I'd like to, the participants are paid a stipend all summer long, and it's a 22-week-long program. So that money that they're paid obviously goes right back into that neighborhood. So it's a way to really generate, interest, income, gives them a good resume. We move them on to jobs or higher ed afterwards. So it's really a great way to take that, you know, that population that can maybe go one way or maybe another way. And it's how can you just, give a hand to that group of people? And the neighbors all support it tremendously.
They love it.
Because, of course, it's a lot of their kids and relatives and cousins and so forth.
And it also makes them more beautiful. I mean, we take it for granted, but I always say to people, what does flowers do? Flowers make people happy. Flowers you send on occasions that, both good and unfortunate, but there's a way of expressing themselves. And so there's nobody else doing this in the city. And we chose flowers. There's plenty of organizations or some organizations that work very well in the food growing business, and that is not something we want to compete with. But flowers, that's something we feel good about. It relates to the Garden Ariel project. It beautifies a neighborhood, and it's creating a specialty that we hope will lend itself to job creation, not only at the Garden Ariel, but with landscapers and stuff and others like that.
Mm-hmm. When we consider funding for the Garden Ariel, you received about $840,000 in competitive New York State grants. What is the timeline for those grants, and where does the funding come from after that?
Good question. sort of be careful what you wish for sometimes. You know, grants that come from state funding take a very long time to actually come through at the front door. In fact, you know, we're still waiting on the vast majority of those grant funds, even though the projects are done or, you know, almost done and underway. But we're grateful for the money, of course, because that allows us a great you know, kickstart into what we want to do. But, you know, that funding, it may be there, it may not be there. So it's really incumbent upon the organization, and we're looking really hard now at earned income streams, grants, grant funding, contract funding. You know, perhaps the Green Visions participants can do contracts for mowing or for taking care of gardens. So the idea of how do you bring income streams into a nonprofit to keep it viable and to keep it sustainable, frankly, into the future. Because, you know, donors, grants, all those foundation monies, all those things may or may not be there in the future. Mm-hmm. So it's really good to have a very mixed bag of income possibilities, shall we say.
I also want to remind everybody that is listening that we're only a four-year-old organization. And many organizations are entrusted by donors to help make things happen and to carry on the services. We, as a young nonprofit, have a small donor base. It is incumbent upon us to grow that. And that's one of the places we're really working very hard. This is a community project. This is being done for the community. It's not being done for Michael and I. And hence we hope that the community will say, I want to support this. This is something good for the community. It's something good for the future that we can leave behind. And it's cool. So I really want to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. And you're exploring public-private partnerships as well.
Correct.
That worked really well in Buffalo with revitalizing their park system.
That's correct.
Do you have specific examples of who's on board so far?
Well, I think, you know, we've been sort of loosely forming what we call internally a sort of alliance, a gorge alliance, if you will, of those people and entities that will also be very active in the eco-district, but can also help together leverage private and public funds. So, you know, that's how we can get this work done, is through really through all these entities working together to leverage each other's contribution to the project. So wouldn't you say that's...
Yeah, I would say, even though it's been talked about and been around for a long time, they're just starting to really everywhere get going and to understand what role does the nonprofit play? What role does the public play? What role does government play? And so it's a learning experience. We're learning it here. I mean, in some ways, you know, both the city and ourselves are looking, okay, what does our partnership look like? What are you contributing? What are we contributing? And we're never really sure. So it's part of the process.
Yeah, we look to things like the Olmsted Conservancy in Buffalo, the people that did Canal Side. There's a lot of great... What's wonderful for us is we look around everywhere mm-hmm. and see what great examples exist and how might we adapt those examples for our own situation, you know, in Rochester here. So we are in constant touch with many, many projects all around the country and around the world, frankly, that allow us to get best practices from them and to then bring those practices to people like the city or to our alliance and say, look, this is what they did in Malmo. This is what they did in Portland. This is what they did in Cleveland or wherever else. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing to have. And it's a great thing to have that thing called the internet that helps you mm-hmm. look for those things and be able to research all that.
Mm-hmm. Thomas in Rochester has been waiting patiently on the line. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. This is Thomas Warfield. Just as a disclosure, I'm on the board of Green Token.
Hey, Thomas.
I just got really excited.
I had a comment. You know, and I didn't want the hour to go by without making this known. But, you know, I think one of the major inspirations and empowerment ideas behind Greentopia is that it sparks creative thinking in our community. So I think it's doing really wonderful things for this community, but one of the things I think it's doing that we're not always aware of is that it's inspiring other people to be creative about thinking about building community and what does that mean, and how can we sustain the ideas of those creative thoughts and those creative projects. And so I think by combining the idea of creativity and sustainability with this idea of growth, like the flowers and things like that, it's really giving us a kind of boost into a new paradigm, a new way of thinking about being creative and how does that really enforce the foundation of building our community. So I just say bravo to Greentopia.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas. And that leads to a conversation about the narrative of High Falls. The narrative of the area has changed throughout its history. It began as an industrial district. It was an entertainment district for 5 or 6 years. And now it's becoming more of a creative district. And that's a narrative that you're helping to write. And I'm looking at you because you're so happy. And I'm just glad to see happiness. And here's, when we talk about ideas, I think some critics say you're full of ideas. You're very passionate. You told Steve Orr at the DNC that sometimes your passion has to be reined in. Mm-hmm. And you're a new organization. You're only 4 years old. But for those critics, what would you say to them, to those who say, what are you doing about implementation?
Well, I mean, I think that we are implementing. We are implementing in so many ways for a four-year-old organization. You know, we've just finished the Flower Garden, our first bricks and mortar project in 4 years. For many people who don't know how municipalities and state funding and all that works, honestly, that's a record-breaking time. Mm-hmm. We also have created Green Visions, a community project that's gone on for 4 years now, where even though that's not bricks and mortar, it's implementing how we will in the future take care of Garden Ariel and take care of our neighbors. We've had free Greentopia and film festivals for the past 4 years, reduced rate Future Summit, bringing new ideas to Rochester, bringing creativity, getting the spark going, as Thomas talks about, is really important for everyone's efforts. And we feel that we like to be a part of that. That's part of a plus in our minds. And I think also then the framework for the creation of New York State's first eco district, my God, that's a huge accomplishment. And we our city was stellar among the cities that were in Portland at the time to learn how to do this. And they were astounded at the assets we had in our city. So in a sense, in 4 years, to do four pretty large projects, one of which is bricks and mortar and the others which are, you know, more policy and boots on the ground sorts of things, I think those are big accomplishments. So that's what I would say to the critics that we don't implement. We actually implement a lot of things. We also have a lot of ideas. Some get taken and some get put on what we call the idea parking lot because we have so many.
We have to rein ourselves in, each other in. And the other thing I think we do really well is, and it's been commented that we do it really well, however, ... But one of the things we're most proud of from a special event point of view is our recent Dinner on the Bridge. I mean, unlike any other event in this city, it was unique. We have a unique setting, and we just wanted to show it off. It will be back this year. We're doubling attendance, we hope, and we're starting also the community launch of sorts for the Flower Garden this year will be something called a garden party. It will be a fundraiser, but it will be, you know, we're raising a garden. We're building a garden. How appropriate. So we do things, we implement things all the time, and I like to say we do them well.
I wish we had more time because I'd like to delve into the eco district, but if you can summarize that in maybe 30, 45 seconds, it's New York State's first eco district.
That's correct.
And it's, I remember Lisa Barron, the last time she was on the program, she said it will be the place to live, and it's near the Innovation District, which will be the place to work.
That's right.
So if you can capture that all in about 30, 45 seconds.
Well, the Eco District will be an overlay district that moves toward ambitious environmental goals, small enough to innovate quickly and large enough to make a difference. So we'll be able to experiment with things like going toward zero waste in that district, going toward zero net energy, going toward healthy communities, alternative transportation. It'll be a way for us to experiment and then take those things that worked and try them elsewhere in Rochester, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, there's eight core strategies or areas of focus. Michael's hit upon some of them. We've already been approached by a health institution. There is no health facility of sorts in this area, in the eco district design boundary. So others are already coming. How can we make a district that really works together, that leverages its common goals and practices, such as let's get recycling done in this district and let's leverage our larger contract with the vendor and, you know, and save money and at the same time set ourselves apart.
I think if listeners have questions about the Eco District, I would encourage them to go to your website.
Absolutely.
Greentopia.org. There's a great new video. It's a very comprehensive website. You can find as much information as you'd like about the Eco District. Let's fast forward about 10, 15 years. Where would you like Greentopia to be, and what kinds of projects and progress would you like to see?
I guess
I'm going to be retired. I'm retired. I said to Michael, 9 more years, that's it.
Yeah, 10 years, maybe I'll still be around. Yeah. I don't know. I think the idea that in 10 years that this city really becomes a shining example of resiliency and creativity. Rochester has reinvented itself many, many times, from flour mills to flower gardens to film to, you know, now the new entrepreneurial creative class. I mean, it's a city of reinvention. We really ought to, you know, part of the thing that astounded me about when coming back is people don't own the stuff that's really great here. It's a really great place. And I think that I'd like to see Gardenerial and Greentopia be a part of that future even past that time, to see the High Falls as a real hub of connectivity and activity and a great place to be downtown.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Lewis?
Well, if you look at the Gardenerial project as a whole, the last piece that I would like to see completed is the bridge over the falls itself, which would then complete a 3/4-mile looped trail. That, for me personally, is the most exciting last thing to see in the next 10 years.
Before your retirement.
Before my retirement. And the reason it's exciting for us is that Michael and I, the organization, I should say, purchased the old RG&E Station Number 4 building. And believe it or not, we bought 3/4 of the escarpment of the falls, which allows us then to actually build on the floor of the falls, because we own it. And so that allows us to build the bridge. And to me, if we get the walkway, the Poulter End Bridge completed, and that bridge built, it'll be a huge success.
So summarize for us the flower garden coming up. When can people hear more? When can they attend an opening event? I know it's a bit roundabout at this time, but
we're still bolting down the gates and so forth. But we should be wrapped up soon. The soft opening will be second week of January, and expect a big grand opening, a fair weather grand opening, around the end of April, I'd say.
Perfect. I'd like to thank my guests, Lewis Stess and Michael Phillipson, the founders of Greentopia. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing
everything with us.
Thanks, Megan.
Evan Dawson will be back tomorrow, and we'll spend both hours talking about the favorite books of the year of local community members, politicians, educators, journalists, so many more. So if you're looking for something to read in 2016, you'll want to tune in for that. Thanks to Val Labanca, the engineer of this program. We will see you tomorrow.